Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 238, Forces of Video. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and Carl's not with me this episode. He's taking the month off to focus on life stuff. So, he'll be back later, so don't worry. But I'm not alone this episode. We've got a legend in the Star Wars podcasting and fan audio community. We have the illustrious Nathan P. Butler from Star Wars Beyond the Films. How you doing, Nathan?
Hey, I am good. 15 years into podcasting, so just let me get my cane or my walker here and we'll be good to go.
I have been listening to you since the the Republic Forces Radio Network days, back when Clone Wars started. So yeah, no, it was really nice to meet you at Celebration for the first time in person. So that was really cool. So
yeah, that was fun. That was a good, I like the whole get together idea. That was a fantastic idea to try to get as many people from Star Wars Report into one place at one time as possible. Got to meet a lot of folks that I hadn't met before. And you made an impression because my wife goes, "Oh yeah, I remember him." I'm like, yes, see, she remembers a specific person out of the giant crowd she met that night. That's great.
Oh, good. I'm so glad I made an impression. It was a good impression, I hope.
Yes, a good impression.
Okay.
You were not like some of the people that we ran into in some of the lines. It was a good impression.
Oh, good. Yes. Some of those people. But that was your first Celebration, correct? That was the first time you've been to a Star Wars Celebration.
That's right. I'd been involved in Star Wars discussion tracks and stuff like that at places like Con Carolinas and Dragon Con before, but this is the first time of ever going to an actual Star Wars Celebration. And honestly, whether it's our last time is still kind of up in the air. It was a mixed experience that, looking back, is much more rosy than it felt at the time.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, one of the reasons why we wanted to get you on here, Nathan, is because you're not only a podcaster about town, but you also have written a new book that has a lot to do about Star Wars. Am I correct? Yes? Yes?
Why, yes. In fact, it's all to do with Star Wars.
What? So Nathan has released a book called A Saga on Home Video, A Fan's Guide to U.S. Star Wars Home Video Releases. And I bet you cannot figure out what that book is about at all from the title. So, Nathan, real quick, can you just give those who may have no idea what this book is about, what the purpose of the book, a sort of publisher's summary idea of this book before we start getting into some of the nitty-gritty?
Sure. Well, in the absence out there in the marketplace of any kind of real Star Wars home video guide, there's a lot of collecting guides out there, but they're generally sort of multi-purpose for Star Wars, and they'll tend to include Star Wars home video just sort of as a product listing, but that's about it. And then you have websites that in some cases are sort of incomplete. Some list bonus features, some don't. I decided to put together what is basically, at least for now, seemingly sort of a definitive resource on at least U.S. Star Wars home video releases. So this is a book that is a combination of sort of a run-through of the products, a product checklist, at least in the very back of the book in the last chapter, which is all a checklist, and done as a history. I feel like, you know, it's kind of like the George Lucas thing where they say, you know, a special effect without a story is a pretty boring thing. I sort of feel like a product listing without a history, without the tale behind it, is a pretty boring thing. So it reads as a narrative history of Star Wars home video in the U.S., going back to the Super 8 days where it wasn't really home video, just home viewing, because film isn't video per se. Going all the way up through nowadays with, you know, Blu-ray 3D and this question of when will Star Wars finally reach 4K? And it is designed to cover all the Star Wars films, but then it delves into the different Star Wars TV series and how they've been released or not in some cases, and delves into the, just kind of the odds and ends as well behind the scenes and whatnot. So a rather extensive look into it, but something that reads more as a history than a product listing. It's not going to just be here's a profile of a product and here's a picture. Tons of pictures, tons of products, but a story behind it as well.
That's really cool. I, as someone who for a split second wanted to have a history minor and then decided to switch it to classic literature instead, I can appreciate the history aspect and the narrative aspect behind a book like this. It makes it easier to follow than rather than just a straight academic, here's what this is, sort of thing.
And I couldn't really get away from that, right? I mean, I teach, my primary profession is that I teach online, but I teach social studies. And I've done that both in the regular classroom and online since 2002. So, I mean, it's kind of my thing, you know, history, economics, and law, including things like copyright law and whatnot. It all fits into this type of thing, and then throw in the Star Wars interest, and it's either going to be my Star Wars timeline gold or it's this. You know, I can't get away from the idea of I want to tell the story behind stuff. And in this case, I felt like I was sort of uniquely suited just because I had reached the point where my U.S. Star Wars home video collection is pretty close to complete, so I'd be able to do that, show it, and that sort of thing all in one place. I was just sort of fortunate circumstances and the time to actually sit down and write this thing.
Very cool. So, a saga on home video, why did you write this book? Because there's always a reason as to why people do these things and actually start these sort of projects. Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, I mean, I guess there was a couple of reasons. In essence, it kind of goes back to YouTube. I am a collector of the different Star Wars books, comics, and things like that, which are resources when I work on my Star Wars timeline gold. And I've been collecting that for years, but I got to a point where that collection was almost complete. Pretty much all the stuff I was trying to hunt down, I had found. And it was just now picking up stuff that was signed and that sort of thing, sort of replacing old copies with signed copies. And I had taken to YouTube and started a series called From the Star Wars Library, and I was going through the different Star Wars books and whatnot in publishing order. And then came the big announcement about the shift from Legends to canon and the reboot and all that, and it became a sort of a lightning rod of a topic. So I slowed down on anything related to that on the YouTube channel, but I had already spun off, fortunately, another series called From the Star Wars Home Video Library, where I was just sort of showing off the different home video releases I had acquired over time. I hadn't really been a big collector of it, just picking up the different versions of the films, like the Blu-ray versions, the special editions, and that sort of thing, but not getting redundant copies or anything like that since about 1993. And as that video series picked up momentum, especially with me sort of shying away from the lightning rod topic of Legends and canon and stuff for a time, the result was that I felt an urge to pick up even more stuff. Like, I'm showing all these, I've finished collecting the VHSs. Crap, I need to go to Betamax now. Crap, now I need the Laserdiscs. Crap, now I need this. Now I need that. And as it sort of built momentum, it got a pretty decent following on YouTube. I want to say it's about 3,500 subscribers now. I mean, it's not huge in the grand scheme of things, but for what I ever expected it to be, it's gigantic. And as people were following that, that also helped spur me on to get more stuff and more stuff until I realized I was getting close to having a complete U.S. collection, had covered it on the show, had done a lot of research into it and became very conversant in it, being able, in essence, to in this case, when I was writing the book, I mean, a lot of the research was looking into specific little minor details. A lot of just the facts on the surface I could just rattle off from memory.
You became an expert before you ever got around to writing the book.
Yeah. It sort of made myself an expert on it, a self-taught expert. A polymath self-taught? But I got to a point where people kept asking, so why don't you write a book on this? Why don't you write a book? And I'm thinking, where's the need? Aren't there websites that do this kind of thing? Isn't there surely a collector's guide out there that I just haven't seen that covers this kind of topic. Surely home video collecting is a thing. But turns out really there wasn't. That it was sort of a gap in the Star Wars collecting library out there. And I wasn't really sure about it, but now that I teach online, I'm able to be more flexible with my schedule. So I sat down one night and said, okay, I'm going to try to write this thing. I want to see how well it can work, and let's see if I feel like I can pull this off. And I sat down and probably belted out two and a half chapters in an evening. Granted, they would go through a lot of revisions later, adding pictures, adding detail, a lot of stuff like, you know, like magnetic video was acquired by so-and-so in the year, you know, double question mark, so I can go back and check it out later, that sort of thing. But as I got on, the momentum just built very quickly, and I felt like, yes, I can do this. So over the span of about 6 months, give or take, I went through multiple revisions. I took over 300 pictures out of my own collection so that, of course, you know, it's Star Wars is a copyrighted thing. It is a Lucasfilm Disney thing, but a book like this that is a collecting guide and that sort of thing about the franchise is perfectly legal under fair use, but it's a little bit tricky when you get to images. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to take every picture myself out of my collection so I own the copyright on the pictures. And slowly but surely it came together so that I was able on May 2nd to finally launch it as a self-published thing. It's through Amazon CreateSpace to make it as available to as many people as possible. And just got it out there. But it was very much sort of a prodding by the people watching saying, hey, you should do this. I've written stuff before, like my time travel and telepath novel, Greater Good. I've written Star Wars essays for the Sequart essay collections. So I had that behind me. I had some editing behind me and stuff like that. So I felt like I sort of could do it. Really what it came down to, the toughest part, to be honest, the thing that I had, the hurdle I had to really get over to say, yeah, I can do this essentially all myself, was making sure that I can actually create my own cover in Photoshop. And went with a cover, basically came up with a cover design that's based on a VHS tape, where basically if you're sitting there looking at the book, it's like the front of the book is the top of a VHS tape, the spine is the side right down to a little tab to pop out, and then the back is like the bottom of the VHS tape. And once I knew that it was possible, it was just a question of how long was it going to take, and turns out I was very lucky, I was very fortunate in being able to get it out for the month of the 40th anniversary.
Very cool. And for the younger listeners out there, VHS, that's what came before DVD.
yes. It's one of those things. If you've ever heard of a player that eats your movie, that's VHS.
Yes. Yes, it is. okay. So what was the most unique item you discovered when writing this book? And that can either be a unique product or a unique factoid that you ran across, or both?
Well, I mean, there's plenty of sort of oddball items that you wouldn't necessarily realize existed necessarily. Like, for instance, you'll find every once in a while there's a DVD that's included with a pack-in of toys or something like that. The bonus lightsaber action DVD, for instance, and things like that. It might be a screener you run into. But the thing that I actually didn't know existed until very close to the end of the writing process, I was able to insert it and get a copy right kind of at the last minute, was that when George Lucas was given the American Film Institute Life Achievement Award, they had this big ceremony, and I remember watching it. I've actually got a copy of it that I taped on VHS from USA Network when they aired it shortly after it happened. And actually digitized that to be able to save it for future watching. When they had that big ceremony, you know, Shatner comes out and sings My Way with the stormtroopers. Yep. Carrie Fisher does her great roast of George Lucas and all of that.
One of the best roasts ever.
Well, it's like, you know, if I didn't sleep with George Lucas to get the part, then who was that guy or whatever the joke is.
Yeah.
But apparently, there were different tiers of guests, and one of the higher tiers of guests who would go, like everybody who went, from what I understand, got this book about George Lucas's film history. But those who were at a top tier got this box set. It's this acrylic brick, basically, that says, you know, AFI Life Achievement Award 2005, George Lucas on it. It's kind of partially clear. It's like a frosted-looking type of container. And you open it up, and it's basically just the DVDs of all of Lucas's stuff at that point. So it's the 2004 original trilogy widescreen set. It's the widescreen set at the time of the original three Indiana Jones films. It's American Graffiti, THX 1138. But they're all packed into this container, wrapped together with this acrylic container around it. And it's insanely rare, apparently. Again, I didn't know it existed. A viewer of the YouTube channel ran across it and sent me a link and said, hey, you know, you might want to pick this up. And we were able to find it through, of all places, shopgoodwill.com. Somebody had put it, like, donated it to Goodwill, I guess. So that sort of thing, I like finding those things that are unusual, that are sort of weird. But then also, I guess, the other thing would be PVDs. Personal video discs.
Okay.
A PVD is, and it's only, to me, it is only surpassed in, by a VHD, which was a Japanese and UK thing. But a PVD is basically, it looks like a miniature DVD. It's okay. A little bit small. But if you remember back in 2005, if you had bought Revenge of the Sith at Walmart, you got this extra bonus DVD called The Story of Star Wars.
Yes.
And it was just like a recap of the classic trilogy is as one episode as the story of Luke Skywalker and a recap of the prequel trilogy's first two episodes for the story of Anakin Skywalker. Well, those were pulled from an earlier product that was a PVD, a personal video disc, that had those two on it plus a little behind-the-scenes thing that was just like a montage of a bunch of different weird, you know, like trailers and stuff. And they were released for a little system meant for kids by Tiger Electronics, called the Video Now. And it was basically, the discs could only fit half an hour or less of content. So basically, it was perfect for things like, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants and things like that.
Right.
And they happened to release Star Wars content on it. So I wound up in the process of doing the book and building my collection, finding the two different versions of that because they had two different releases of what's a similar product, and actually having to hunt down a working Video Now player to even figure out what was on it. So not so much the PVDs themselves, but having to find a working player was kind of a weird thing. I'm still on the hunt. Someday I will finally hunt down a new, a working condition, replacement Betamax player, you know? So the weird things are always the things that I didn't know existed or that just most people didn't know existed. There's all kinds of other like little cool things out there, but I always go take the weird over cool because to me, weird is cool.
I would agree with that. Weird is definitely cool. Focusing on your collection here a little bit more, what is your favorite part of your collection of the, obviously the home video collection here. Do you have a favorite item?
Well, I would say that from sheer coolness, it may be things like the new line that's coming out of Movienex in Japan, which are these premium limited box editions of the new films, because they have the new films in steelbook. They have all kinds of little mini posters with them. They have action figures with them. In one case, a Figarts. A Death Trooper specialist figure and that sort of thing. So, you know, those kind of things are really neat. I would say I'd probably be torn between a couple. I have the complete Ewoks VHS set from the UK.
Whoa.
Which is basically Ewoks minus two episodes is all they ever put out. Not that I could watch them here because it's PAL, right? But still, it's right. That's the principle of the thing.
Yes.
but also just recently, and this was actually after writing the book, so they're discussed in the book, but there's no pictures because I didn't own them yet. I've been able to acquire just in the last year for a substantial sum, but thankfully I didn't have to break like a grand or anything. there's these limited edition versions of Dressing a Galaxy and Sculpting a Galaxy. These books, these giant coffee table books that the books themselves were like $50. But right. Yeah, these limited editions that were hundreds of dollars back in the day, extremely limited production run, that have home video with them, right? DVDs with them, so it counts, and all kinds of stuff like model replicas in one case, actual fabric from that they used when making Vader's cape and stuff like that.
Whoa!
Really, really cool stuff that have now been added to the collection, and they're fun because they're kind of like a hybrid between the two collections that I have, right? The books and the home video stuff. And I treat them as part of the home video collection and the home video library because they have those DVDs with them, one of which is really awesome, from Sculpting a Galaxy. The one for Dressing a Galaxy is just a bunch of rehashed stuff that had already been released on DVD or in electronic press kits.
So it's essentially like a really fancy upscale version of the Jedi Path big, box set thing with all the extras inside.
Exactly, exactly.
That's cool.
Take something like that that's going to run you about 100 or less and crank it up to, like 300, 400, 500 bucks when they were originally released. Cool. And in these cases, part of what made them so exciting for me to pick up was that I had never thought that I could add them to my collection because of the price point. Because usually, like Dressing a Galaxy, to find that in good condition, even open with everything kind of loose in there, usually those sell for over $1,000 for one copy of that.
Ooh.
Even the actual regular book, because of the interest in the costuming community, the cosplay community, the book itself, just the $50 regular coffee table book, will sell for hundreds of dollars. I was lucky to find one on eBay at just the right time where the price was under $1,000. I forget exactly what it was. I want to say it's like 400, 500 or something. But I just – it was in the process of getting my pay for teaching a bunch of extra students as a heavy student load that we're able to kind of play with each year. And my wife said, it's the one time you're going to find it. You better do it. So I'm like, yes.
You got the wife's approval. That makes it even better.
It was going to be a what do you think? Should I? And the response was, you better do it. And I'm like, all right. Sweet. but yeah, I mean, I would say those are favorites because they're hard to come by, and they're sort of the story of the hunt. There's just something to be said for. And this is what a lot of collectors go through. There's something to be said for a piece that you had to go through certain hoops to find, and there's a tale behind it, as opposed to something that's really cool, like the Rogue One Premium Limited Box Edition from Movie Next from Japan, where the story behind it is, I set up an Amazon Japan account and ordered it. Where's the fun in that?
Right. Right. No, that's really awesome. Oh man, I'd love to see that one day. That sounds really cool. All right, so out of all the chapters in this book, was there one that was difficult to write?
I would say probably the one that was the most difficult, I would say, is one called Behind the Scenes and Other Oddities. Because at that point, we've done 7 chapters on the live-action films. Mm-hmm. We've done chapters on the Genndy Tartakovsky micro series, Clone Wars. We've done droids, we've done Ewoks, we've done the Clone Wars and Rebels, and even Lego Star Wars gets its own chapter. And then we get to this chapter that's sort of a catch-all. And it was sort of where to draw the line in terms of what to include.
Gotcha.
And in that case, I included everything that I have in my collection that I think would make sense to include, plus a couple of things that I didn't have at the time which I felt needed to be included, like Sculpting a Galaxy and Dressing a Galaxy. But then it raises questions like, okay, well, does Phineas and Ferb Star Wars count? Well, it was Disney and it was heavily promoted, so maybe. But if that does something like Robot Chicken count? Does Family Guy count? I said no on those counts. does Spaceballs count? Like, where do you draw the line when it comes to these things that are sort of tangential until you get to the slippery slope of, well, everything that's ever referenced Star Wars ever, like Muppet Show, must be included. So in that sense, it was sort of a matter of how do I present something that is extensive, but not necessarily exhaustive, that just hits this breadth and scope and is going to be a good guide for collectors. That in and of itself was a little tricky. And then I guess if there was anything that sort of stepped beyond that point, I would say that it was probably Rogue One, not because Rogue One was difficult per se, but because of the time span. Like, I wasn't sure when this book was going to come out. I was debating trying to put it out prior to Celebration, because we tried to get a collecting track panel about Star Wars home video collecting for Celebration, and they didn't go for it because they had a pile of submissions, and this is not really a popular collecting trend. So that wound up being a blessing because it gave me the opportunity to then pick up all the Rogue One stuff and get it into the book. But even then, with it coming, with the Rogue One coming out in April, and I'm trying to include, you know, I'm even trying to include stuff from the UK if possible, it really was kind of a race to make sure I had everything to be able to discuss and get the pictures in, if at all possible, before the release. Like, I could have ignored the UK stuff, because that's just a sidebar, the meanwhile in the United Kingdom, meanwhile in Japan or whatever. This little sidebar for this interesting foreign stuff that pops up from time to time. The focus of the book is US. But it was sort of a, how much can I get in, and how long can I really wait until I have to say, okay, I'm done. I've got to get this into final form in order to get it out for the anniversary. That was actually the dividing line. That Rogue One Japanese premium edition is not in the book, because it came out basically right after I said, okay, I've got to lock this down and get it ready. It arrived in the mail right before publication. Again, thankfully, it's not a U.S. release, so it's not a big deal. But it was a race, really, to get that Rogue One chapter done on time and in a way that was as extensive coverage as it was for, say, The Force Awakens and the others.
Okay, then. Very cool. What's the most difficult part in the whole process of making this book? You self-published this, obviously, so I'm guessing it's the writing is probably the easy part for you, I would assume, and it's the actual getting the book out that's difficult.
Yeah, I mean, for me, part of it was the cover, again, because if you're going to self-publish something, unless you're going to hire somebody to create a cover for you, or let the system, whatever system you're using, whether it's Lulu, CreateSpace, whatever, create your own cover that's just like a solid color and the name of the book or something, you're going to have to create it yourself. And I had proficiency in Photoshop for some things, but I'm by no means an expert. I would call myself intermediate at best when it comes to Photoshop. Mm-hmm. And it came down to sort of a, could I create this cover? And if not, who could I turn to? And it took a while to get through that process to actually get it to work. But then really the last week or so, week to 2 weeks, as I was getting it ready for release, it was the page layout issue, I guess.
Oh.
So I used a template from CreateSpace. They provide a template. Right. And I set up the pictures in a way based on a suggestion from a friend of mine, James Wilder, who's also used that for his 10,000 or 10K, you might say, Dawn's book series. But the pictures are set up as tables. So if you want to have side-by-side pictures to make easy comparisons that still have a caption, the easiest way to do that is to make a table and just remove all the lines, right? So the table format is there. Everything's lined up exactly the way you want it, and nobody sees the lines. Well, one, I wound up not doing a Kindle version because it turns out that, oh, the Kindle conversion process, the CreateSpace, isn't as foolproof as it looks. All the lines come back. Oh, so fun. For a Kindle version, I would have to reformat basically the entire book. But also, you can be looking at your proof copy that looks perfect in Word as you've designed it, upload it to CreateSpace, and there's just these little tweaks that that it makes as it's processing that sometimes changes the way it looks, even though you use their template. And what I ran into was a series of frustrations where the first thing was, like, this book has a ton of footnotes in it, usually for an aside, like a little joke by me, or me griping about, oh my god, I can't believe it, the whole Sky Guy Snips thing, or whatever. But when I put the footnotes in, it does it so that it adds a little line above the footnote to separate it from the text, and then there's the footnote. And that looks great in the template, but when actually processed through CreateSpace, it put the line that's supposed to separate the text oftentimes within the last line of the regular text. It looked like I was crossing something out.
Oh.
So I had to go back and reformat that to work. And then every once in a while, I'd find an instance where there was a big chunk of a page that was mostly empty because a picture got carried over that wasn't carried over in the original template from one page to another. And then the last, you have to basically make sure that you can do a proof online, but I like to have a proof in my hands to flip through and make sure it looks right before I say, yes, this is the version I want to publish. Go ahead and release it. Mm-hmm. And I ordered a proof, and I'm like, yes, I'm done. And then it struck me, when I work on my timeline, and when I was working on this book, if there's something I need to fill in later, I'll do a double question mark so I can easily do an edit find and find the double question mark and remind myself to fill that in. I was like, did I forget to do that? Let me check. And there was one word the book where it basically in the UK, if you bought – I forget the name of the store off the top of my head. But if you went and you bought Rogue One at this particular store, then they would not only give you the movie, but you would get a little copy of the book with – Sainsbury's was the name of the place. And I had fixed it in the text, but in the caption it said, Rogue One UK releases, clockwise from top left, regular with limited edition sleeve, Zavi exclusive steelbook, Rogue One Junior novelization, bonus with purchase at double question marks, etc., etc. Because of that one caption, I basically needed to go through and fix it. Thankfully, it didn't require any other fixing. Have another proof copy sent to me, which took another couple of days to then check and make sure it was fine. And since that was the only thing left to check, make sure it was formatted correctly, and then release. But it was sort of that, the different iterations there at the end where it was like, I thought I was done, but really it added probably another good 2 weeks, even once the cover was done, to have it formatted exactly right after it goes through that create space process. It's the templates are not exactly what it's going to look like, but it's close. And it was that difference between the template and what it would actually look like that had me pulling my hair out for that last couple of weeks. I was hoping for May the 4th, and I barely got it under the wire for May 2nd. I expected that I may have had to push it back to like May 25th because there was that much frustration with having to do different iterations of upload, double check, upload, double check, order a proof, wait for it in the mail. Crap, gotta fix something. Upload, double check. It is a harrowing process.
Oh man, I can only imagine. All right, last question about the book before we get into Forces of Destiny here. What's the future? Because obviously home video is still coming out. It's not ending anytime soon. So what's the future about this? Are we going to get future versions of this perhaps or not?
Well, if this was a couple months ago, I probably would have told you always in motion is the future. But instead, I've had enough time to consider it and discuss it with readers, with people who are part of this fantastic home video group on Facebook just called Star Wars Home Video that was set up by a guy named Justin Berger, and with some of the viewers from the Star Wars Home Video Library on YouTube. And basically the decision is there will be future editions, but when really just depends on when there's enough content to justify it. I don't want it to be just sort of an annual thing because that would add one or two new Star Wars films, maybe a couple of season sets of stuff like Freemaker Adventures and Rebels, and that's it. That wouldn't add much to the length of the book, and I would just be putting it out again just to say, hey, here's a new updated version, and then I fall into the same trap that Lucas does, which is, hey, or not Lucas, actually, it was a 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment at the time, which is, hey, buy this film, and now buy it again, now buy it again, now buy it again. It's new bonus features, don't you know? So the idea is that once there is enough content to justify it, there'll be a new edition. I kind of liken it to what they did with Star Wars Year by Year, which is here's Star Wars Year by Year. A couple years later, here's a new update that's got some new content for things that have happened since the previous edition. And then quite a few years later, here's another one that's an update. And in theory, someone could pick up the second edition, third edition, fourth edition, whenever they come out, and they would always be getting more, never seeing things removed, never seeing products no longer covered or anything like that. So in theory, it would substantially grow over time. But that it would all be based on, is there enough to justify it? And once there is, we'll go for it. My guess would be we probably won't see a second edition until we see home video releases of at least Last Jedi and Han Solo. We may be talking Last Jedi, Han Solo, and Episode 9. It really just depends. I mean, I've added a few more little odds and ends things to add to that behind the scenes and other oddities, maybe even to separate that out into a behind the scenes chapter and then sort of a weird stuff chapter. But I don't want it to be something where it's almost exploiting the audience and their desire for the most up-to-date information to constantly put out updates. But at the same time, I recognize that, yeah, as you were saying, Star Wars Home Video is not stopping.
Yeah.
It's going to reach a point where this – I mean, any book like this is going to be out of date within probably a year on some minor level.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize people want to see something grow. Now I guess the question is, and I've been playing around with it, well, how will we do that on the cover? I'm debating between either having like a little circular sticker or a circular thing looking like a sticker that would say something like, you know, second edition, just like sometimes you'd have like 5-day rental or something, or if I should find some variant on the Be Kind Rewind label sticker and have that be where it says second edition. I have notes. Brian Snook, who's been so kind as to donate some stuff to the collection, and he was the one who actually sold me Sculpting a Galaxy. When he sent me Sculpting a Galaxy, he sent me just some extra duplicate stuff from his collection, one of which was a Darth Maul designed journal, like to use as a journal, from around 1999, I guess it was. And I've been using that to take notes for a second edition. So the note process has begun, but no writing process has begun, and I don't expect that to happen for a while yet. I want to see some new stuff. And hopefully by the time there's a second edition, Disney will be putting out Star Wars stuff in 4K. Because rumor has it, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 will be the first Disney 4K release. And where Disney's Marvel franchise goes, so it seems goes Star Wars. Not so much their original stuff. So maybe. We'll see.
Maybe. Ooh, for those of you who are 4K fans, there is hope. All right. So real quick. Where can people pick this up if they want to get it?
Oh, just hop on Amazon.com or .co.uk or whatever your regional Amazon happens to be, and you can pick it up through there. If you are wanting a signed copy, there is a way to arrange that. Just email me, Nathan@StarWarsFanWorks.com, and we can figure that out. Basically, I do a thing where I order a copy, have it sent to me, sign it for the person, and send it out to them. Just using PayPal to cover the cost of it and that sort of thing. But the easiest, fastest way, especially if you're a Prime member, is hop on Amazon, look it up. You don't have to use the whole title. Just look up A Saga on Home Video, and you will see it right there. If you want to see a Q&A about the book, any more information about the book, sort of an introduction to it, if you're still kind of iffy on it, my YouTube channel is username Chrono Radio, so youtube.com/Chrono Radio, Blast from the Past, my original podcast. And you'd be able to find that there as well. But Amazon is the place. I'm told now you can actually order it through regular bookstores. They just have to do a special order to get it. But you're talking about a longer wait to do that. So Amazon's so much easier.
All right. Very cool. Forces of Destiny. That was a very seamless segue there. Sorry.
It will eventually be on home video. Maybe.
Maybe.
Possibly. Like, Resistance Rises isn't yet. Most of Ewoks and Droids aren't yet. The holiday special isn't yet. Okay, sorry. I was about to explode. It's okay. It's okay.
Okay, so Forces of Destiny has been released this week. It's been beginning to be released this week. And, of course, silly me, I wasn't paying close attention. I thought we would get a giant dump of all of these things on Monday when it was going to be released. And no, they're releasing one a day until, I guess, the 9th when they air it on Disney Channel. So as of right now, we're recording on Sunday, the 9th. Oh, it is the 9th. and there have been 6 of these shorts released on YouTube, on the Disney YouTube channel. Overall thoughts on Forces of Destiny, Nathan. Were you interested in this to begin with or not? You know, that sort of thing.
Well, it's funny you refer to a giant dump. No. sorry. It's too easy. I'll be honest. I wasn't quite sure what to expect from these. The announcement kind of came out of nowhere. And then there was sort of that question of, well, who is this going to be aimed towards? How long will they be? And that sort of thing. And of course, it was immediately presented as this is the way we're justifying this new merchandise line. They purported it. This is going to be a series that is designed to aim towards young girls, to the female fans, to show appreciation for female Star Wars fans, and for the lead heroines of Star Wars. You don't have to call them female heroes. They're heroines, folks. I guess the thing to me is that on first viewing, I was very disappointed because they're short. They've got the feel really of the Genndy Tartakovsky micro series, the Clone Wars micro series from back in the day. But they're not trying to serialize it aside from Sands of Jakku and BB-8 bandits. So in that sense, it feels like the stories are very quick, underwhelming, I dare say pointless, almost useless. They're not really filling any gaps. It's sort of a blink and you'll miss it and you would never notice that you missed it kind of thing. Like, I don't think we really need the answer, where did Leia get the dress that she's wearing in the Ewok village? Here's an episode about that. Ewok escape.
Yes.
But that said, on a subsequent viewing, just sort of knowing what they are and sort of saying, okay, well, I'm just going to take it as it comes, there are some of these episodes that are quite entertaining. The Imposter Inside, episode 6, is really quite fun and action-packed. The thing that hits me, though, is it feels like this is – it's either a missed opportunity or it is – at best, they missed the mark on what they were trying to do. At worst, it is an insult to the people they were trying to praise. Because I would say, for instance, if we were to try to talk about this to the creative team, we might sit back and say, the choices you make, the actions you take, insults, both intended and accidental, shape you into architects of failure, or close to it. Because they're saying, we are doing this to show our appreciation and build up essentially the Star Wars fangirl. Female Star Wars fans, you have been ignored for too long. We love you to girl power. Here's a show for you. Here's a product line for you. And it winds up being short fluff with little substance. It winds up being something that seems to have sort of iffy quality control at times. For instance, Leia's voice. We've had, in the last 15 years, people who have done Leia's voice very, very well as voice actresses. Not so much this time. It doesn't sound like Leia. There's a running gag on Star Wars Beyond the Films from the Leia comic series. That's not Leia! Because the comic series totally misrepresented the character. Well, here's a voice that sounds nothing like Leia. Anakin somehow doesn't have a scar and looks kind of like he's more Taylor Swift than Hayden Christensen. We hear sounds being reused that are pretty obvious, like an Ackley sound for the Night Watcher worm and so on. It sort of felt like they sort of cut corners to do this. And it really, in this day and age, compared to something like a Rebels or a Clone Wars, it feels like my immediate thought on seeing it was, oh, it's flash animation, which is never a good thing whenever you're watching a cartoon. So it feels like it's a lower production value level of production that it's hard not to think of as just sort of the shill for the toy line. Buy new dolls, not action figures, but dolls of Leia and Rey and Jin and, well, it sort of looks like Sabine, just not from the neck up kind of thing. So to some extent, it feels like their base, like what it could be interpreted as. Instead of it being, well, this is aimed at little girls, this is aimed at kids. Kids don't care about continuity or production value. They just want a quick, entertaining story. And they're going to like Star Wars dolls because you really don't get much of that out there for girls. Usually it's, you know, it's action figures. There are girls who have been bullied because they liked Star Wars. That must change. Absolutely, it must change. But in saying, this is our love letter to female Star Wars fans and having it be kind of meh fluff, and sort of a blatant merchandising thing, I feel like it'd be very easy for female Star Wars fans to be more insulted by this series than uplifted by it. And that's my concern with it. It seems like it kind of missed the mark. Turn your brain off. Don't think about the broader implications. Quick, fun little 2 or 3 minute things. Start analyzing it. Anything, any level beyond that, and it starts to kind of show the cracks in the service.
Okay. I I'll be perfectly honest. I've only seen, you know, these things like one or two times. So it I've been very busy this week, folks. So give me a break. But on the surface, I agree. They're kind of fun little things. My biggest issue with these, if there is an issue, is that, you know, there's not a lot of there. They're fun, but there's not a lot of substance to it. Which, you know, I know not everything in Star Wars has to have that. I mean, it is designed, you know, on the surface to look like it's, you know, designed for a younger audience, definitely. And I'm not a younger audience, so fine, I'll leave that. And I do like the animation style mostly. I think some of it's pretty cool. It's nice to see Star Wars in 2D again. You know, after it's been so long since Gendy came out with the Clone Wars. But I guess my biggest thing is, you know, we get this whole epic, you know, build up with Maz saying, you know, shape us into forces of destiny, and we get a story about, you know, Rey and BB-8 running from a Night Watcher worm. And I'm like, how is that supposed to be shaping us into forces of destiny? You know, it's... I like them on the surface, but the build-up to it seems to have overshot the mark of what we're actually getting. So I would agree with you on that, you know, in sort of that aspect. But, you know, they are fun, and there are some of these that are actually quite good, in my opinion. The Padawan Path I thought was fun, and you're right, the imposter inside was rather enjoyable. The ones I really like are the ones with Ahsoka. So, you know, what do you think of some of these individual episodes we've got so far? The Sands of Jakku and BB-8 Bandits are essentially, you know, goes from, you know, the night that Rey found BB-8 to the next morning before she hits Nima Outpost. You know, actually, quick question. Is the Night Watcher worm that's, shown in these videos, is that actually, you know, what they were supposed to be designed to be? Because I didn't know that.
I think so, but that was one of those little details. I was like, what is that weird head thing going? Is that an Arcona? No, it's not an Arcona. It's called a Night Watcher worm. Okay, great, whatever. And I moved right along.
Gotcha.
But I think that the individual episodes, I mean, the quality varies. It's hard not to see, so far, everything, really, as, again, kind of the fluff. If this was a series like Clone Wars or Rebels, we'd call them filler episodes and get derided by the creative team sometimes for calling them that. That's kind of what it is. They remind me very much of Marvel's most recent thing was they finished up the Screaming Citadel crossover, which was huge. And then it's, now here's Rebels in the Wild. It's one issue of Luke and Leia being stranded on an island and no hope of escape for 3 weeks. And then they finally find their way off of it, where the only interesting question the entire story that's raised is, when they felt like they had no hope and were stuck there for 3 weeks, did Luke and Leia get it on? And if so, what are the implications for that in the screwed up nature of Star Wars? Because they didn't know yet. But it's kind of one of those, you know, this might be interesting to see, but did it mean anything? I think you hit the nail exactly on the head with this idea that they're supposed to be being shaped into forces of destiny, and then there's absolutely nothing epic in the episodes to make us feel like that. Not even that particular situation, but anything relating to the situation has any bearing on how heroic the person turned out to eventually be. Though I'm not sure how they could have done that with some of these characters if they're going to be showing them, like for instance, Rey, before she gets pulled into galactic events. If you make Rey into a hero or a heroine in a large scale prior to The Force Awakens, that somewhat diminishes the choices she makes to finally leave Jakku and become a heroine in The Force Awakens. So individually, I would say Sands of Jakku, BB-8 Bandits, they are, to an extent, on the right track. I wasn't as thrilled with the, oh, it's a monster chase kind of thing, and oh, the spear's in its mouth, so as soon as it closes its mouth, it will go flying, although the fact that it went straight to her hand and she was able to catch it is either ridiculous or a great foreshadowing of my favorite moment in The Force Awakens, where she calls Anakin's lightsaber to her.
Yes.
Though the fact that you had those playing on each other, that it felt serialized initially, gave me those good positive connections back to Tartakovsky, where the bulk of those episodes, but not all of them, the bulk of them out of the 25 did tend to connect together. Ewok Escape, it did raise the question of, wait a second. You know, like I had never thought, wait, where did Leia get the new dress. Clothes from?
Right.
And now it has the question of, okay, well, she got it from the Ewoks. So she didn't make it herself. She got it from the Ewoks. Okay. But then that begs the, so did they take her measurements and make it? Did they all have it pre-made? Was it left by Sindel Tawani for when she got older? No, wait, that's not canon anymore. So where did, you know, raises new questions. I had a hard time with that the first time watching it because, you know, that's not Leia with the voice. But it turned out all right. The fact that she, I think that it would have been a much less impactful episode had it not had her line near the end where she comes out and there, she's like, it's a great dress. Does it come with a spear? Because that is Leia, right?
Right.
It's nice, but I still need to be able to kick some ass. So what you got?
Right.
Padawan Path, to me, was a completely throwaway. I love the, you know, Ahsoka saves the kid and the mom. I guess it's the mom. You know, did I just assume the mom's gender? I guess it's the parent, whatever. By breaking open the pipe and putting the water on the damaged droid, ooh, and then she gets to Yoda. We never know what the meeting was about. And Yoda's like, you're so brave. Oh. And like, did she tell you what she was doing while she was gone? Or are you just telling her that she's brave because she showed up late for the meeting and she dared to be late? What is your point? So Padawan Path did nothing for me. Beasts of Echo Base, while again, not all that exciting to me, didn't like the Leia portrayal. Again, that's going to be an ongoing thing for me. But it is kind of cool that now within canon, we again have the Wampas at Echo Base, which is
yes.
From deleted scenes from Empire. That's cool. And then Imposter Inside seems like, I mean, it's about the same length as all the other ones, but it felt like it crammed more into what it did because it was more action-packed. It showed us some good character interactions between Padme and Ahsoka. They both sounded right to our ears because, of course, it's the voice actors from the Clone Wars. That one turned out really, really well. I mean, the only thing that had me wondering was when she cuts around the bomb, right, the detonator, and uses the Force to push it before it explodes. I couldn't tell whether she was pushing it and it exploded before it got to the window, then didn't damage the window. If it went out the window and exploded, and that we just never saw the window open, was the window always open? Because I was expecting some window crash type stuff. But if that's the quibble I've got with Imposter Inside was really well done.
Right.
Only quibble. It varies, and it's going to be up to, you know, the rest of the series to see how it plays, and who knows, maybe we'll wind up finding that there are episodes in the future that connect back to these the way that BB-8 Bandits did to Sands of Jakku, and we wind up with something that turns out to be more serialized than it looked on the surface.
That's the case. I hope that's the case, because I liked the fact that, you know, Sands of Jakku and BB-8 Bandits, you know, connected, and it was very much, you know, like the next morning, and we're continuing this idea. And I thought that was going to be the format that we were going to get. It was going to get, you know, two, maybe three episodes that sort of all linked together with these characters and these situations. And I know from some of the promotional stuff that we've got another episode with Leia on Endor where she's supposed to team up with Hera and Han somewhere. So I was like, oh, good. You know, I saw Ewok Escape and I was like, oh, good. Maybe we'll get that next. And then we went to the Padawan Path, which, you know, I wasn't disappointed because it was Ahsoka and I like Ahsoka. But, you know, I was like, oh, I guess we're not getting that one now, maybe. So, you know, I hope we do get these things, that, you know, in more serialized fashion, because I think that helps it string it together and make it less little vignettes, which I'm not opposed to. You know, it's nice to have little shorts to throw in, you know, here and there on the TV channel or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's fine. But you know, I do hope they get to be a little bit more serialized for the the not child audience that we know is out there watching these things. So
right, right. And I think that's another thing that I would worry that if the thought is, well, young girls, and they can define what young means, but young girls don't care about serialized stories, whereas, you know, older audiences, or perhaps males do, I would assume older audiences, you know, there are, you know, some children can be somewhat sophisticated in that sense, and is that, you know, kind of condescending to assume that when putting it together? But I think that this, it's a series that, I mean, based on a lot of the stuff that we've said, to some extent it has the same issues that Aftermath did, the first Aftermath book, in that, one, there's an expectation versus reality thing, yes. Right? What did we expect it to be? What did we hope for it to be versus what was it? In the case of Aftermath, it's the first adult novel set after the events of Return of the Jedi. Find out what happens. And then there's, you know, the big three are barely in it. Luke isn't in it at all. You know, it's these characters we didn't know before, except for Snap. And then it's also hampered by this, well, it's the first adult novel set after Return of the Jedi. Let's draw immediate comparisons to Heir to the Empire. So it was being compared to something thought of as kind of a classic of Star Wars publishing. In this case, it's immediately getting comparisons sometimes to Rebels and to Clone Wars, but mostly, as we've been doing, to the Tartakovsky series, the closest thing in its style that we've seen, both in terms of length and in terms of animation style. So it has those things going for it, and to some extent there is some internet controversy. And I say internet controversy because it's not real controversy so much as it's sort of the I'm going to find a reason to get mad about something. I'm going to be offended for some reason because I want to be. Therefore, oh my God, it's a Star Wars story all about women. Huh. That's sexist. Or
really?
The feminism has invaded Star Wars. It's all about these girls, girl power, and you see this. I did a search. I was just going to look for Forces of Destiny review on YouTube. That's all I looked for.
Oh, well, that
and there's
is your
a
problem.
Huge,
you look for it on
huge
YouTube.
List of stuff that's like, you know, it's like feminism invades and the social justice warriors of Star Wars and all that. And it's sort of a, you know, there's a case to be made that female fans have been underserved in Star Wars. I think that's an easy case to make. Yes. Not necessarily that female characters have been, but to some extent, yes, whether we're talking about Padme having much of her characterization removed for Revenge of the Sith because of the deleted scenes where she spends, you know, two movies as an action hero and one barefoot and pregnant, or the way that, to some degree, other female Star Wars leads have been undermined by other characterizations, whether it's in the books or comics. I mean, there's something to be said for this idea that what they were trying to do had some merit. But rather than looking at it as, well, is there some merit, and is there probably a little bit of controversy that could come out of it? Maybe. And having that at like a level one or two, instead it's the internet and social media. And all of a sudden, it's all cranked up to like 11.
Right,
know?
Right.
And that was the same thing for Aftermath.
That's what it does.
You know, Aftermath introduced a main character who was gay, a group sorely underrepresented in Star Wars. Whether you believe there should be more representation or not, it's hard not to say that they have been that homosexuals have been heavily underrepresented in Star Wars for the most part over the years. And they just he tried to address that. The difference really is that whereas Chuck Wendig fed the fire, you know, feeding the fire of, well, you just don't like Aftermath because you're homophobic. I'm like, what? I wanted to see Luke and Leia. You're homophobic. What? whereas as he was sort of out there stoking the flames and the people around him making those kinds of accusations and such, the Forces of Destiny creative team seem to be relatively silent right now and just kind of letting people take it in. So there's not that back and forth. You know, don't feed the trolls. If the people on the internet are trying to gin up their own controversy and find something to be offended at, one of the worst things you can do is respond, because that will give them more fuel for their fire. And they're not this time. But there's definite parallels between what happened with the first Aftermath book and this. And I'm wondering, now that we look back at it, like, I can recommend the first Aftermath book sort of one, for people who love sentence fragments, but two, if you're going to read the second and third books, you really need to read the first. It's the introduction to those characters. So in context now, even though I cringe at it a little bit still, I would say, yeah, you should probably go ahead and check it out. And I wonder if by the time Forces of Destiny is over, once the expectations are away, once the controversy has gone away, if we'll get to a point where it'll be like, you know what? Check it out. It's kind of like the Lego Star Wars stuff. It's fun. It's quick. It's little. It's not going to change the galaxy, but it's Star Wars. And any new Star Wars on television, you know, it's hard to argue that's not a good thing.
Right. I agree. You know, and I suppose I'm also wondering, you know, we're getting these all released on YouTube right now. And, you know, I've talked about the serialized nature of Sansa Jakku and BB-8 Bannis. I'm wondering if the rest of this is just like, hey, let's select a couple of these different, you know, shorts in order to, you know, throw up on YouTube, get excitement for all the different characters that are going to be featured. And I'm wondering if maybe when it's actually released on Disney Channel, we'll see something a bit more serialized, a bit more, you know, with a storyline going through it, you know, when it's actually officially released. I don't know if this is the official release order that we're supposed to be getting with these, you know, one a day drops that we have out there. I don't know.
That's so true, because I mean, we did they changed the order, not Disney, but Cartoon Network changed the order of a couple episodes of Clone Wars micro series when they put it out on home video, because they felt as if, you know, I guess they're it was served better the other way around. There's some question as to it. I think that what we're getting here is the finished product.
Okay.
I'm not sure they'd put it out there for public consumption if there was going to be something more coming later, because now you've got all the reviews and it's sort of already built up people's perceptions of what the series is. A lot of people are going to be watching them on YouTube only and not bothering to check them out, or not able to check them out even if they don't have cable. Like, I mean, we've cut the cord to be able to watch it on Disney. Talk about the fanboy rage. I have to sit back and say, so maybe they'll have these retooled and edited in a different way or expanded when they put them on Disney. Fantastic. Does that mean there are now two different levels of canon in relation to this series? I thought it was all supposed to be one level now. There's, you know, all of a sudden it's heads explode and everything goes to 11 for a couple of days.
Right.
I don't know. I would hope that eventually we're able to see these all together. You know, like, I just watched them all together, and I felt like in watching the six back-to-back to prepare for this, I had more of an appreciation for it as I went along, because it wasn't a jarring feeling of, whoa, that was fluff, what did I just watch? Like, I had, like, the first time, it was being able to enjoy it sort of for what it is and partake of the whole without any jarring changes of style. And, you know, whether that's a home video release where it runs them all together without Maz's opening every time, and it's just run together the way that the Tartakovsky stuff was, or perhaps done in such a way as there was actually some calendars released back in 2008, 2009, and the 2008 one had 2008 and 2009 both had DVDs with them, and in 2008 it was basically just a bunch of trailers. We'll do something like that where it's every episode, but you have to access each one separately by hitting play on each, so they don't actually run together, but it's much easier to just watch them all at once, like a YouTube playlist, so to speak. That type of thing, I think, would be a better experience in general, and I'm hoping that at some point, if it's not on home video, that at least Disney tries it, you know? Especially given the fact that, given it this treatment, given it the treatment that like the Tartakovsky series had on Cartoon Network, it seems like, and I haven't heard anything to the contrary, it seems like this is sort of a we're going to run this in between shows kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's always a tricky thing to get people to catch or to remember to tune in for, which means that those who aren't watching it online in a lot of cases may wind up, you know, missing it. So we'll see. Yeah. Hey, for all I know, this will be the first 4K Star Wars release on home video, Forces of Destiny with high dynamic range, for all I know, you know. But it'll be nice to see how this is packaged once it's all out there, because I really do think this is going to be one of these things that once we're able to take in the whole at once, it's going to leave a better impression than for a lot of people the first viewing has.
Yeah, definitely. And if you haven't watched these yet, and you want to, I definitely just carve out, you know, 15, 20 minutes, whatever, and just sit down and watch all of them at once. You'll definitely walk away appreciating them much more than if you just watched one and went about your day and went, what was that? And then, you know, because it is, it's a totally different style of not only of animation, but of storytelling. It's, you know, we got these quick 2 to 3 minute vignettes there, you know, and there's only so much you can do in 2 or 3 minutes. Let's be honest. So, you know, they're not going to be earth shattering, galaxy changing. But the little things, they're fun. And I think you're right. The biggest quibble I have is the voice of Leia. There was a line in Ewok Escape, and I forget which one it was, that just sounded so stilted, and I was like,
"What are you doing?"
Was it yes, something? That yep, that yeah. What are you doing? Yes, I was like, "Ooh, that was a first take that shouldn't have been in there."
it's like, come on, you don't even need to see it to be able to say that. Although I will say that you're right. If you want to watch them all, carve out like 15, 20 minutes. They're easy to watch. You can just zip through them. It doesn't take a lot of brain power. Just sit back, grab some popcorn, and just experience it. Though I will say that if you think too much about it, then you'll need to carve out a few hours following watching to sit there pondering, I really want to know, did they take her measurements or was it a leftover? Where did they get the dress? How did they know to make a dress? They don't wear dresses.
There's an Ewok seamstress that just takes measurements by look. She's got a good eye for that sort of thing.
It's her force power. She's a force of destiny.
That's it.
The choices she made to learn how to sew made her a force of destiny.
I do like the really quick thing in Ewok Escape where when the stormtroopers drop out of the tree after, you know, Leia and Wicket have disabled them, and the one Ewok catches the blaster, it looks like it's the black Ewok that we see in Return of the Jedi that, you know, wielding the blaster in the middle of the battle. So
yeah, it was just nicely done. Although, again, and this goes back to sort of the, I feel like, to some degree, when we watch this series, we really have to take a Pablo Hidalgo view on it. He recently on Twitter was talking about the idea of canon and said that while it is not Lucasfilm policy or anything like that, just sort of his thoughts on the idea of canon is that canon really shouldn't be way, way too granular, right? That, you know, in essence, should it matter whether Han or Greedo shot first? Looking back on it, it's different people telling a story about the same event, possibly embellishing in different ways. But the truth is, both of them walked into the bar and one walked back out.
Right.
And little things like that, that little granular things shouldn't be bothered with. So maybe we shouldn't be bothered by Anakin not having his scar. But it strikes me with that episode, a friend of mine on Facebook made the comment right after that episode aired that it was sort of a just saying kind of thing. It wasn't like a really snarky thing, but it was, you realize that in Return of the Jedi, the little vents on the Stormtrooper's mask are supposed to be black and their holsters on the other side, right? And it was kind of one of those, oh, you know, and that, to me, to some degree, had me say, wow, maybe we are just looking at this a little too in-depth. It should be, holy crap, the little Ewok just grabbed the blaster and that little Ewok just almost got shot in the crotch by the blaster. And isn't that fun, as opposed to, does the Ewok's finger actually fit within the trigger guard?
Right.
You know?
I did notice the Ewoks blinked in this one, so.
Oh, so there you go. So they are the post-20, they are the even more extra special edition version of the Ewoks.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, folks, Forces of Destiny, it's not supposed to be something that you just pour a bunch of brain power into. It's supposed to be fun. Just enjoy it. The little shorts, it's more Star Wars. You know, you don't, if it's not your cup of tea, that's fine. You're not going to miss something terribly much. But if you want some of these little details that might be fleshed out by it, if you want, you know, it's a little fun, you know, cartoon thing to check it out. It's not a big deal. If you don't like it, but give it a chance and don't like look at it and analyze it on the level of say, you know, Rogue One or The Force Awakens or something coming out. You know, seriously, it's not what it's designed for.
I saw deleted scenes in the commercials for Forces of Destiny. Where are they?
Oh my gosh. All right. Any other final thoughts on Forces of Destiny or anything else you want to get out there, Nathan?
No, I'm just I'm eager to see where they go with it, and hopefully it'll be something that on future viewings we'll find enjoyable. I guess that my only concern, call it a hope and a concern. I'm just hoping that with Forces of Destiny, if it's going to continue to be the way that it is, for better or worse, at least don't do anything that's overtly contradictory to some other thing within canon, so that it raises the questions of whether or not it should be included at all. And let's just kind of let it go. If it's continuity inoffensive for the most part, Anakin, Scar, etc., let's just kind of let it be.
Right. Yeah. And that is from the continuity expert here, folks. So
yes, the continuity expert who goes nuts over little things like, I don't understand how they can't pin down the story. How Matt Martin of the story group is saying that he guesses this story takes place here? You should not be guessing. The man in charge of the Star Wars line for Marvel, Jordan White, is saying he prefers that fans make up their own timelines instead of them keeping track of when the stories take place. What? Of all the reasons to be frustrated over continuity and such in recent memory, Forces of Destiny? Not really one of them. It doesn't rank on that scale.
Oh my gosh. Oh, there's some times where I'm like, I'm glad I'm not heavily invested in some of these niche areas of Star Wars, because I think I'd be pulling my hair out sometimes.
I don't pull my hair out, but the bruises on your forehead after banging it in the desk over and over again just... Sometimes you gotta cover those up before you can go to work.
It's a good thing you work from home. Exactly. Online. All right, well, thank you, Nathan, for coming on and talking about your book and Forces of Destiny. Where can people find you if they want to follow you?
All right. Well, if you want to check out the other podcasts I'm involved with Star Wars Beyond the Films with Mark Herlowin, talking about legends and canon books and comics and whatnot. And with Michael Morris for Cloud City Casino, which is a Star Wars gaming podcast, whether we're talking about video games, tabletop games, card games, whatever. Both of those are found alongside the Wampus Lair over at StarWarsReport.com. And again, my YouTube channel, youtube.com/chronoradio. It's chrono like chronology and then radio, all as one word. And the Star Wars Timeline Gold, the most comprehensive Star Wars chronology available anywhere, about to have its 20th anniversary this October.
Oh, dear Lord.
At over 3,000 pages, is available at StarWarsFanWorks.com/timeline.
Wow. 3,000 pages?
3,000 pages. It's you got the story group canon document that's about 450 pages or so now. You've got the legend stuff divided into multiple documents because Word can't handle a multiple thousands of pages document without croaking. An appendices file and so on. But, I mean, it should be huge. I've been working on the thing for 20 years, my entire adult life.
Oh, my goodness. It's a good thing you didn't try and publish that.
Yeah, that'd be A, copyright difficult, and B, I'm pretty sure we would lose a part of a poor forest somewhere.
Oh my goodness. All right, well, thank you everybody for listening here. If you want to follow along with us, be sure to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. You can tweet us at WampusLair. Of course, you can email us at WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com. Of course, visit StarWarsReport.com for our podcast and all the other collection of wonderful Star Wars podcasts available there. Thank you, Nathan, so much for joining me as Carl takes a break this month to address other life issues. So I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. Been a blast.
And thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. It's been episode number 238. Forces of Video. For Nathan, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.